Sessions.
While there's still no word on the cure for the virus,
report suspicious activity and call 911.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Hey, Bal.
Hey, man.
How we doing?
Good, man. So last week we talked about...
All right, dude.
Okay.
Listen, I know that we had a plan to do this elaborate thing, but since this past week was one of my favorite person on the planet's birthday, and that's Mr. Woody Brown.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Happy 49th, my friend.
Yeah, right.
I thought, you know what? It's been a minute since we've caught up. I've kind of been going wild with soccer tournaments and my sister-in-law getting married. And, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. I thought, why don't we just catch up? Because we really haven't done that in a minute. And I think it's time we did that.
Yeah, man. Okay. Well, I mean, I was excited about talking about what I had planned, but I'm getting used to it now of you just pivoting and going in a different direction. So I agree, man. So, what do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, I think that I haven't seen it yet. I have read a little bit of it.
Okay.
But for our manga fans out there, why don't you get into your response to the new One Piece show adaptation?
Live action? Okay, cool. Well, let me just kind of set the scene here. So obviously, I've talked about it on the show before. My kids have just been in love with One Piece since we started reading it, I guess right before the summer. So... And, you know, we've been reading it nonstop. I'm still not caught up to the last book that was released, which is...
Wait a minute. You said that you guys just started before the summer?
Yeah.
And how many books has...
Well, right now, there's only 103 books. And I'm on book 96. But, you know, my oldest has been done for, like, weeks, man. I mean, he just would read, like... three or four a day, just nonstop. So,
dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's just some of the best stories ever. And I mean, I could just go on and on about it, but...
Can you give like sort of like a rough synopsis of like what it's even about?
I mean, yes. Like sort of just very, very long story short kind of thing. It's about this main character named Luffy. And he's a kid who wants to be a pirate. Now, obviously, in the world, pirates are thought of as despicable robbers, looters, you know, bad guys. But this kid sees being a pirate as more of being in it, you know, going on an adventure, hunting for treasure that's somewhere, right? Not necessarily like stealing from someone else. Anyway, along the way, he kind of, I don't know, comes across this sort of cast of characters that he ends up building his own crew out of these people who have these incredible backstories, and they just go on this mutual adventure together eventually. And, you know, in general, the entire series and the stories are all about friendship and family. And when I say family, I mean not even having to be blood related, but that feeling of being a family with your friends and everybody, you know, being adventurous and having goals and pursuing your dreams. And it's just fantastic, man. I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like Eiichiro Oda is maybe, if not the, but one of the greatest storytellers of all time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's just, I promise you, I would not be reading it if I wasn't just instantly sort of captivated. I mean, it's like a mix of Goonies and global folklore that he sprinkles in there. And you know that same sort of feeling you get when you watch Goonies? How they were obsessed with pirates and stuff too. It wasn't because, same with us when we were kids, it wasn't because like, oh, well, someday I want to be a pirate and grow up and like rape and pillage. It's more, hey, I want to go on these adventures together and we're out to sea and there's just like this grand, you know, idea. anyway, that's the general sort of synopsis of what One Piece is all about. It's much more complex and stuff, and there's all kinds of stuff that happens, but that's just general, okay? I will say this. So in the books, there's not really, you know, sometimes you have to kind of watch out for a lot of inappropriate things in manga just because, in the Western world, some of those jokes are deemed sort of, you know, a little too racy, or sometimes it's just straight up nudity.
Oh, yeah.
In One Piece, the manga, every now and then there will be like a bad word, light, you know, like hell or ass. Okay.
Yeah, right. Which isn't.
It's not so, too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the anime, they boosted that to include words like bastard or like shit, and sometimes damn too. That trend, that came over to the live action.
Yeah.
So in other words, well, it's just so hard. First, let me give my overall review, which is I love it.
Okay. Okay, good.
But there are a couple of things where I'm like, oh man, I would have made a different choice. First off, I'm going to tell you, Tyler, but anybody listening with a kid younger than 10, I would say hold off or message me directly. I'll tell you exactly when to sort of like fast forward through it.
Pivot, yeah.
Because there's one part in the very first episode where this guy chops a bad guy literally like in half. His torso is just a punk, and it's just like, huh? And so that was a little much. Could have completely done without that scene. I say that, and there's adults that started reading this in the late 90s, because it came out in 97, the first book, that are old enough.
Yeah. It's been at it a long time.
Yep, yep. And then a lot of those anime fans are used to that kind of violence and stuff. So I think that that so far is the sort of quote-unquote worst thing.
But is the manga, like, is it violent like that?
There's some violent moments, but most of it is still kind of cartoony a little bit. And
yeah,
since it's black and white, it doesn't really... And even the anime, there's violent moments, but it's not like that necessarily. And still, since it's a cartoon, it kind of doesn't seem as intense.
Yeah, right.
So I think there's only 8 episodes. Each one's about an hour and some change, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I'll say the amount of care and attention, and you can tell that they worked, everybody from the set designers to the construction crew to every single person. It's one of those shows where you can tell every single detail, every aspect was very well taken care of. I'm just, my curiosity is like, will people who, so Anne started watching it and she enjoys it. It makes sense. I think, any gripes that I think people have are going to be more along the lines of like that they kind of compressed a lot of stuff into these 8 episodes. But I think the way that they did it was really, really smart because, the format of this versus what it originated in, right?
Right.
It originated in a weekly comic strip, if you will. Not really a comic strip, but, it's like a small chapter, 10 pages or something, maybe more.
Yeah.
It comes out every single week. And so you can kind of really, not even, it's almost a necessity to kind of draw out a lot of detail and stuff like that. In a live action show, to connect to these characters emotionally, I think they did it great because they show their backstory. And I don't know, man. It's awesome. But I wonder if people are going to appreciate it as much as I do, having just been immersed in this for the last, 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. Do you know how many episodes are supposed to be,
No, I don't even know if
on
it's
on the show.
So they released 8. That's it. And so they released it all. So you can binge it. I'm on the 7th episode right now.
Man.
And I mean, my kids loved it. The whole first episode, we did this whole thing where it came out on a Thursday. I promised them that I would not watch it on my own until Friday night. We went to this new store in Georgia. There's one in New York that we went to, and it's called like Tezo Life or something. It's a Japanese store. Mm-hmm. They just opened one in Duluth, which is just north of Atlanta for everybody not from
There's
Georgia.
that new manga store like in Braselton that we got to check out.
Yeah, we do need to check that one out. But this place has like food and stuff like that.
Because
I wanted to get like just tons of Japanese snacks and stuff and just make it like a big deal. And so we got all the snacks ready. It was like our night. And the whole time, you know, obviously we'd seen the live action trailer and stuff, but they did that really well too. They left a lot of stuff to be desired. And so when we were watching the first episode of the show, it was like, me and the kids just kept looking at each other like, oh, that's, you know, oh man, dude, it was incredible. So it was a cool experience.
Yeah.
You know, do I wish they wouldn't cuss as much? Sure. But I think it's amazing, man. It's really cool because there's still this sort of like fun aspect of it. There's a serious aspect of it. There's kind of like a darker, creepy aspect of it in certain parts with some of the villains. And then there's this overarching sort of theme of Luffy being like, it's impossible not to be inspired by this kid. And the casting, dude, I haven't even gotten there yet.
Yeah.
To me, spot on.
Yeah. And I mean, you were saying that even just from like the trailer.
Yeah. And I mean, the characters, like I thought Zoro, and in the manga, it's spelled Z-O-L-O. Hmm. I've read that that's because that was Oda's way of like bypassing the copyright.
Yeah.
And so he wrote it, the English translation is Zolo, but it's pronounced Zoro in the anime and everything. So anyway,
awesome.
I thought he was a cool character before. Dude, jeez, he is just so bad at the bone, man. And it's so good, man. It's so good. I would just say the downside is that I wouldn't show it to your kids just yet.
Mm-hmm.
At least watch it first so you know when to like, you know, I just wouldn't. I don't think so.
Man, I mean, this is kind of a tangent, but speaking of pirates, I just ran across this thing the other day that's kind of fascinating. And I'm totally going to butcher it because I don't know. I haven't really like looked into it, but I happen to run across it like on Instagram or whatever. But it's this sort of fan theory that Peter Pan actually may be the villain of the story. Have you heard this?
Oh, man. A long time ago, I remember somebody saying something like that.
Yeah, dude. It kind of blew me away a little bit because it's like, you know, we just sort of take for granted, like, oh, it's his merry group of like the Lost Boys and Captain Hook's the bad guy. Well, this theory kind of suggests that, like, I guess the reason, so he's basically like kidnapping like orphans in a way, and like he's like killing the kids when they start to go into like adulthood, like the Lost Boys.
Mm.
And so like that's why it's always just perceived that like everyone else never grows up. Whereas like Peter, he doesn't grow up, I guess, because he's, I don't know, magical or whatever.
Right.
But it's just that there's like this whole thing. And then like Captain Hook and the rest of the pirates and his crew, they're the ones who chose to grow up or whatever. So they're like always at odds with like Peter. And I don't know, it's this weird like sort of, you know, it's like one of those things where suddenly you're like, God, I've never even thought of that.
But yeah, I feel like there was something like this too with Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there was also one about, you know, of course, Johnny from Karate Kid and how like Danielson was actually the bully.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they kind of do explore that on, what's
Cobra
the show?
Cobra Kai.
Yeah, Cobra Kai, that's right. That's such a weird show for me because it's so entertaining, but at the same time, like, and this is a theme that's going to pop up a lot on this episode, so get used to it, folks. But it's this sort of concept of, like, who's the show being written for?
Yeah.
Like, Cobra Kai, for example, is the perfect example of this because, okay, so we're doing a show that's kind of campy, kind of cheesy, but it's appealing to the people that grew up with the Karate Kid movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think the brilliant part about it is it is showing showing like an alternative look at the story where,
right.
Oh, wait a minute, Johnny was motivated by this and now we're seeing this sort of down and out Johnny and we're sort of picking up where, you know, Daniel-san like won and went on to have a wonderful life. Mm-hmm. And
they kind of switch roles. I mean,
a little bit, yeah.
That's honestly, especially that first season and, you know, into the second season and stuff, I actually really liked it because of that, you know?
It's
a really cool way to illustrate that, like, man, some of those, like, dynamics and stuff back in high school and as you're growing up and stuff are certainly far more complex than, hey, that person's a Soche and that person's a Greek. Now, I just made it sound like I grew up in the 50s, but.
Dude, Outsiders, that's my favorite.
Yeah, I know. Cherry Valance.
Oh, she was something.
Oh, boy. Anyway, what was I saying? I got distracted by Diane Lane.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that it was Diane Lane.
I don't forget. Whew, boy.
Man.
Incredible.
Yeah, no, the dynamics of like that high school.
Yeah, yeah. They're more complex than just like you belong in this group. And everybody's kind of at different points in your life, you're gonna sort of evolve into different, I don't know, areas that you need to kind of like different challenges that you need to overcome, you know? And yeah, like Johnny came from like a well-to-do family, and then, you know, after his defeat, because he put so much importance in that too. He had nothing else, right? And so now he's sort of like trying to, that character arc of trying to discover who he is and why he's important. And then on the flip side, Daniel's son coming from nothing and basically building himself up, winning that tournament, becoming something, having, you know, a good mentor in his life, and then riding that success, and then sort of just kind of falling into that trap of, you know, looking down on other people and that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And you're right, though. That is another thing that's kind of difficult. It's a difficult challenge, I think, for anybody making something such as One Piece or Cobra Kai, because you've got an audience of such a broad age range that you're trying to sort of please them all. But my question is always this, because I think this is where you were going with that, like, gripe about Cobra Kai. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why it feels like they don't know who they're targeting or who they're appealing to is like you'll have this really heartfelt moment or whatever, and then all of a sudden it's just like this maybe like upper end of PG-13 either phrase or theme, and you're like whoops, you know. And so it's like I always wonder, are there really going to be that many adults that are like, man, this show is just too cheesy, no one said the word shit,
right?
You know, like leaving that out, is it really that big of a deal?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I mean, it again, like, I like the show because it's sort of standing on the shoulder of, like, this franchise that was so beloved, especially as, like, a kid growing up in the 80s. My wife had never seen any of them early in our marriage, and it's the only time that I can think where I literally slammed on the brakes of the car I was driving when she told me that.
Oh, man.
Because, dude, I was obsessed with those movies.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, watched those movies so many times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the show is, it's like on paper, it sounds like it would be perfect. And there is a lot of things about it that are really great. There's a lot of really cheesy acting, though.
Yeah.
And it is kind of in this like sort of like WB or CW style.
Right, right.
You know, which all that is like, okay, that works, even though I'm not a huge fan of like the CW kind of style. But everything I've said thus far like makes sense. It's like, okay, cool. This would be a great sort of a little bit on the campy side. But then if you think about the movies, like they had little bits of that, like him dressing up like with a shower curtain.
Yeah.
And like, which is so funny, but you know, it kind of goes along with it. But then, like you said, it's like drop the F-bomb or like make weird sort of like sexual references and stuff.
Right.
And it's like, who's making these decisions? Like, who is this for?
Also, is there something else going on here? Like, are we just getting old? And
yeah,
because
maybe
we have kids that are like younger, it kind of like is abrasive to us. But maybe if you don't have kids, or if you're those kids' age and older, you're just like, man, will those old guys just like chill out? Who cares if we say the word?
It could be, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just feel like there's smarter ways to do it. I'll give you a brilliant example of how to drop the F-bomb in a movie that is relatively for kids / adults, and that is at the very end.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
If anyone out there
wants, we're fighters for truth, justice,
in the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show. In fact, it's the last scene of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
When Tom Holland is in his room, he's
or
just...
Peter Parker.
Playing Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. And he has just, like, overcome all this craziness. He's finally back at home. He kind of swings in his window, and he's changing... I think he's still in the Spidey suit, and he, like, takes off the mask or whatever. And then you see Aunt May, who's played by the lovely and big-time crush, Marissa Tomei.
Mm.
And she just says, "What the?" And then right at the second that her mouth forms the letter F, it cuts right to credits and the Ramones. And it's like,
yeah,
dude, my son thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Even to this day. And it's like, it conveys that word and the humor around it without having to actually say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, like, even within this new Star Wars movies, when they say damn or hell, it's kind of like, is it necessary? I mean, I understand that they're, like, writing in today's sort of vernacular, I guess, but...
Yeah,
I just think there's smarter ways to do that without coming across as like a cheesy kids show or, you know.
Yeah, but my thing is, it's like, it is a cheesy kids show. Like,
yeah.
Like, for all intents and purposes, it 100% is a CW show.
Yeah.
From the way
you're talking about Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's just so, like, jarring. I mean, it's kind of, I think also, like, because it is so reminiscent of, like, the CW. It's like, it would be like if you were watching Smallville or what was the other big one? Like, I guess Arrow and that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden you just out of nowhere, you hear like a f-, and it's like,
God. Yeah, even then that just kind of,
yes,
you know, it startled me.
That was my point. Yeah. Yeah. I don't totally get it.
I'm not pleased by it in the One Piece, but it doesn't seem so misplaced really, you know? And the things that I read online, I haven't read a single sort of like anyone sort of just bombing it. I mean, everyone says like it looks like the live action curse has been broken because that's what so many people in a lot of these forums and stuff have been saying, like all of the anime live action adaptations are just garbage because you can't, it's so hard to portray. And you know, even going into this, I was really nervous because there's, you know, one of the things about this universe is there are these things called, and I think I've mentioned this on the show, these things called like devil fruits. And whenever the person eats them, it gives them a certain power.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
Luffy, the main character, he's almost like made of rubber. There's other people that can do all kinds of different stuff. And I was wondering, like, how are they going to do that visually? I thought it's still, again, kind of cartoony, but for Luffy, but for other people that they show, it's way better than I thought they could do it. And it's just, man, it's just so cool. So my immediate recommendation to anyone is I don't know if that's the best introduction to the story, but it's a good one. And I'm certainly happy about it. And I hope they just continue to go. Because these kids, especially the cast, deserve to be this crew for a long, long time. And they did an outstanding job.
And they're all pretty young too, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's kind of, you know, that's kind of something that we're starting to see, like, oh, well, you know, if we want a franchise to last a long time, like, I mean, Marvel's kind of doing it. DC, like, since James Gunn is kind of taking everybody. Which, by the way, have you seen the new photos of, like, the guy that's going to be the new Superman?
No, huh? They picked him?
Yeah. I mean, I think he looks pretty good, man.
Really?
I mean, he kind of looks like just a younger Henry Cavill.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I'm still a little upset at that because I thought Henry Cavill was so good as Superman.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
You didn't like it, did
no,
you?
No, man. He just way too many bicep curls. And but you, like, have you ever? Well, I'm asking the listener at this point because I already know the answer to it. Has Tyler ever done too many bicep curls?
Dude, I used to work out all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's been forever, but
I know. Yeah. I know it has, pal. But you know that feeling you get, like, if you do a bunch, like, you know what the preacher bench is?
Yeah.
It doesn't. Hey, listener, he He doesn't know. He's just saying.
Yes, I do. I literally used to go to the gym every day when I lived.
Doesn't know what it is. Making
yes,
it up.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
You get that good pump going. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I got to get a pump in. Yeah. Anyway, like whenever you do too many and you just can't even straighten out your arms all the way, they're just too sore. That's Henry Cavill, Superman.
Yeah.
All the time. It's like his arms won't just be by his side. They're just kind of like permanently shortened. It's like, yes, I don't know, man. It was just.
I can see that. He was, yeah.
But that said, I think he was a great Superman.
Yeah.
He's just a little, it was just a little too pumped up. I don't know how else to say it, man. I love him. He's a great guy.
All right. So this is a terrific, well, do you want to say anything else about Cowboy Bebop or whatever show you're
Come on, have a little respect.
I'm kidding. Oh, no. I was going to say this. I never read the manga, but I ended up getting an Alita Battle Angel commission.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably a good habit for the people that commission me to do artwork, but it's also a bad habit because it I waste way too much time. But so I try to like, oh man, I need to like know the character and ended up watching the Battle Angel movie or I guess it's just called Alita.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I thought it was awesome.
Have Is it a live action?
Yeah.
That's the one with Scarlett Johansson or whatever?
No, that's Ghost in the Shell.
Okay. No, I've never seen it.
Alita's pretty awesome. I think your kids would dig it. I mean, she literally, you know, she's kind of like a cyborg, so she looks like an anime brought into like the real world, which I think they did a great job. I mean, it looks great and it's pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, my pivot from that was going to be on to the next thing, which I still haven't seen the last like maybe 15 minutes, but a movie came out that we briefly talked about it, but then we were like, well, let's just hold it for the show. And that is the new movie, The Flash.
Ah, yes, dude.
What are your thoughts on this pup?
Whew, man. Well, first, I got to say, just because of all the trauma and his name?
Ezra Miller.
Yeah, and all the stuff that was going on kind of weirds me out.
Yeah.
He was like living on a ranch and like holding people captive. I mean, just very strange stuff. But, and so my expectations of the movie were below zero. I wanted to see it just because, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't have seen it. I wouldn't even press, I wouldn't make any kind of an effort to see it if he hadn't been in it. But that said, Ann and I watched it and we came away with like, man, that actually wasn't as bad as I thought. There were plenty of parts that I actually really, really liked. Mm-hmm. This is another example of, you know, there are some certain things that, you know, we're a little bit on the older side of PG-13, but at the same time,
exactly.
We're so hilarious.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. It was fun. I'm glad I didn't pay money necessarily to see it. I mean, obviously, it streams. I do pay for it, but just not in the theater.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I thought, and again, I still haven't seen like the last maybe 15 minutes, but I did think, fan service wise, I think they hit a lot of things that you wanted to see.
Right.
You know, like coming from the trailer, seeing, you know, Keaton again in the suit. And I think they did such a badass job with him.
Yeah.
Unlike the way they sort of treated the Batman character in Justice League.
Mm.
And we've talked about that before. I mean, I still think the Snyder Cut is actually pretty, pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The original one, the guy that did Buffy and Avengers, Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
I walked away so disappointed with that movie. But to me, the Snyder Cut, like, I mean, they...
I kind of want to rewatch both of them. I feel like I just don't like a lot of... The one thing about DC is, like, it lives in this, like, realm of extremes. It's either, like, extremely, like, glossy and, like... plasticky, colorful, like oversaturated stuff, or it's like Joker, super dark, like almost
Suicide
like
Suicide Squad,
ultra realistic and stuff. And I kind of want it to be somewhere in the middle. Yeah. I liked the Snyder Cut in a lot of ways better. I liked Whedon's version better, music choices.
Well, I was going to say, there's one thing that I think is better, and that's the White Stripes song.
Dude, I mean, seriously, that scene specifically was almost like lost in terms of like how freaking bad of the bone it was in the first movie versus the second one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one choice that was like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like,
didn't like
it. Like, if Joss Whedon did anything right, it was that scene.
Yep. That scene alone totally made me want to watch Aquaman the movie. I'd be disappointed when, now, you want to talk about a movie I hate. Don't even get me started, man.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean,
like, my heart's pumping out of my chest. It infuriates me, that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Here I thought I was going to have a good day. It's been my week. It's been my birthday this week.
I ruined your birthday.
And so now I'm just pissed.
No, but back to The Flash. I think there's so many things that just killed it, and we'll get into it. But first off, I do have to say, like, and a lot of folks may not know any of this kind of stuff. So for the folks that do know it, like, you're rolling your eyes. But a lot of people don't. They think of, like, okay, a movie is made. You know, it's like a big time, like, film studio, especially with a movie like The Flash or like a comic book property.
They use this instrument. They call it a camera. And, like, how deep are we getting here, pal?
No. I'm just going to say,
A movie is made.
No, listen. A lot of people just think, like, oh, well, this film studio makes this. They handle all the special effects. They handle all the actors. But in reality, it's like these, especially these, like, massive, big-budget movies like The Flash, a lot of the, like, special effects are sort of farmed out to, like, smaller studios. And so that's why sometimes, I mean, even in, like, Marvel movies, which I think they do a lot better job. Like, to me, like, DC has dropped the ball so many times when it comes to, like, their CGI effects and stuff. But with, you know, like I said, even with the Marvel movies, it'll be like amazing, amazing, amazing. And then there will be a scene where it's like the mouth flap on Thanos is like so bad. And you're like, what happened?
It seems like you have something specific in mind.
No, I can see it in my head, but I can't remember. I can't think of in particular. But, like, it's because these movies are so big and that kind of stuff takes so long to create that they farm out to, like, these, like, little, like, mini studios. A lot of them are, like, overseas because it's just the way it is. It's cheaper.
Yeah.
The labor's cheaper. And so, you know, then it's like, oh, well, this is our deadline. We got to have everything by. So you have, and it's nobody's fault, really. You know, it's like,
although, man, like, we don't have like a. I mean, I guess it's just hard to do. And then once it's just kind of like, you remember that time we were in the mastering studio? We stayed up all night.
Yeah.
And then mixing and stuff. And then we get in there and we're just like, just print it.
Dude, my ears were so shot. I couldn't. Yeah.
Maybe
that's the thing. You have these like other studios that are, you know, they're kind of bidding to get. So for example, say you and I have like Midnight Radio Studios is like, we work on like CGI stuff, and it's like, you know, we're gonna undersell a bid so that we can get the bid to make a scene where he's, you know, a montage where like in The Flash, for example, where it shows like, he's looking at the multiverse, which I thought looked kind of dumb.
Yeah.
I didn't
know. Well, okay, hold on. That concept was amazing. That's what I was going to say. Cool, and I don't want to, like, spoiler stuff, but, like, some of the cameos were incredible. But then, like, yes, there was, like, sort of a missed opportunity in terms of the CGI. It was just kind of like, oh, God.
I mean, to me, like, well, so what I was saying is, like, we're going to, like, undershoot, so which means we're not making what we should make. But we're doing that so that we get our foot in the door. And now our names or our studio is in like a big feature film, and that lets us do more and more and more. Well, we're working ourselves to the bone because there's like a deadline, and it's like that. It's like, well, that's like the best that we could possibly do in the time that we had.
Yeah.
And so you have like a bunch of different scenes that are totally different studios. You know, it's like there, like one studio would handle just the CGI around like his suit, the way like his head fits in the suit, which I thought was so bad. It was
whose head?
Just the Flash. I thought if you go back and focus, I mean, it's kind of like the same like this with Robert Downey Jr. when he's in the Iron Man suit, when the mask like flips up.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
and it's like
It's typically pretty good. I'll tell you, on the Iron Man front, for, you know, since we're bashing the DC choices for their, whoever they have working on the CGI,
yeah.
On the Marvel front, the one time that I was like, oh no, was
in the
Avengers. I don't remember which one it was. Maybe the last one, Endgame.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where it's like the girl power scene, but like it flips up and Gwyneth Paltrow's
mask
pops up.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, they didn't do that good at all.
Well, it's even worse than that one is like the original Avengers when it's showing from like the point of view of Loki, and he's like opening his, after he's just been like beaten like a rag doll by Hulk, which was a great scene. But then you see the camera angle like from his view, and it's looking up at the Avengers, like Tony's face, and like I think the Hulk was really bad.
I need to go back and watch.
Yeah, it's awful. But it's kind of that same thing. It's like the way, you know, they're clearly not wearing that whole suit thing. So there's like this integration between like practical, like his real face, and then the suit. And like, man, it's
always so disappointing because it seems like, and again, this is my own ignorance sort of chiming in here, but it seems like that practicality, meaning like, why not just have, maybe it's just too bulky, I guess. Why not just have a helmet that opens, man?
Well,
I mean, they sell them at Target.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's weird, though, is like this movie, every single scene that you see his face in the suit, like it's just like.
It's also whenever he's alongside the other Barry.
Oh, it's
bad. Did you notice that? It's like, man, you guys don't want to do the Back to the Future trick where you just like shoot half of the thing. It's almost like they're like, okay, we got maybe one or two takes with this kid before he just like tries to eat somebody.
Goes off the rails.
Let's just use the CGI, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is pretty bad, man. And it's kind of a bummer because I think like the directing and stuff is pretty good.
Yeah.
Again, our theme pops up where it's like
it's a confused.
Know. Yeah, it doesn't really know what it's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. Like, it's like, okay, DC, this is your perfect chance to basically kind of do your Avengers. Not like as like a team per se, although it is kind of a team movie, really. But it's like, you know, the suit is like pretty bright. Like people always talk about like the Avengers. They're like, they weren't afraid. They weren't trying to just be dark. They weren't afraid to like let it be like a comic book.
Yeah.
And this is your chance. And it's like, you know, I let my oldest daughter, Amelia, watch it. And, you know, it's like, do we really need to hear like him say like, like, six times in
now
the movie?
I will I think he only says it once, but I will say that scene was hilarious. So I think maybe going back to what I said earlier is like, is it a thing because of where we are in life and how old our kids are? See, for me, my oldest is getting closer to the teen age, and it's like that scene, and he's a boy, that scene
was hilarious. Yeah,
you know, so I think, I don't know, but dude, I can't believe I forgot to talk about this. I will tell you one of my other favorite parts about this movie. Bruce Wayne at the very beginning. I'm not Bruce Wayne. When he's Batman, okay, he's riding on that motorcycle. Let's talk about the color scheme of the costume, pal.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's like the old school gray and blue, man.
Yeah, it's straight up like Dark Knight Returns.
Like that floored me, dude. Because you've never seen that in a movie ever.
Although I do have a critique about that also.
Go ahead.
If you go back and watch, like, there's some weird CGI mouth stuff.
Oh, really?
With that, too. Yeah, it's almost like, which I was wondering if was done on purpose, because it is kind of supposed to be like an alternate reality. So, you know, and it's like, okay, you have the Dark Knight Rises motorcycle, you know, but he's wearing like a different suit, which I did not like the suit when it shows the full suit.
What are you talking about? Like you're talking about the blue and gray?
Yeah, I mean, the colors are great, but like when you see him like standing up talking to Wonder Woman, he has like this weird, go back and watch it. It's bizarre. But I'm wondering if that was all sort of purposeful. It's like, oh, this is like an alternate reality. Things are a little bit different. He's sort of a mix between
Christian Bale.
Yeah, like Batfleck and Christian Bale. And so like the voice was a little weird at times, and then... And then, but then it didn't make sense, because then you have Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, she's regular. Alfred's the same.
Yeah, I think that part is supposed to be the same universe.
Oh,
as you know, the original Barry, or like, you know, the Justice League one.
Oh, well, then they just it's just bad then. Yeah, go back and watch like just his mouth and like the speech of Ben Affleck.
We'll return after these messages.
Something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
So I agree with you. It's a movie that doesn't really necessarily know what it's trying to accomplish, but if you kind of like break it down to simplify it, it's like there's a kid who thinks he has the ability to potentially save his mom's life, to prevent something. So then there's a time travel aspect here, which of course you know I'm going to love.
Oh, yeah.
But like the dialogue and interactions that, and those themes that are repeated throughout the movie where Barry, it's kind of cool because I think this movie really, in a way, shows more than ever the sort of mentor that Bruce is to Barry, because Barry's dad's in jail, you know?
Yeah.
And so he gives him a little bit more direction. And there's some like powerful things he says about like, you know, our past is really what makes us who we are. And so you shouldn't, you know, or he says something like our scars are what make us who we are. I mean, something, you know, it's kind of cheesy comic booky stuff, but it is true though, man. Like, and then the same thing whenever he meets the other Bruce, Keaton, that same kind of theme is throughout. There's and let me just say this too before we get too far into it. Dude, Supergirl is so freaking bad at the bone.
Yeah.
Like, I want a Supergirl movie with her as Supergirl. She is freaking incredible, dude.
Yeah, I thought, so when I first saw like the production stills originally, she had like this harness on and like these like fake abs under the suit. I mean, it looked so bad. I was just like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? But I think like the old school, like for our comic fans out there, like Elseworlds, that was a thing that DC did where they're like, oh, like Gotham by Gaslight, where it's like, okay, here's a Batman story where he's looking for like Jack the Ripper in Victorian England. It was a chance for them to kind of like go off the rails and do like, oh, maybe in an alternate universe, this happened, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm always a fan of that stuff. I think it's amazing. I mean, to be honest, it's kind of how they treated the Joker, the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's no, you know, this doesn't fit in any like ongoing Batman canon kind of thing, but here's Joker in the 70s and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And so I'm always like a huge fan of that. So at first I was like, oh, God, why are we not just having like Superman? Like, because to me, like the sort of I don't know, your girl version of the hero is like Supergirl. There's like, oh, now we have a Green Lantern girl. Like, that's something that has been going on since, like, you know, the 50s. But there's a little cheesiness to it.
It's like Spider-Woman. They're always just, like, not as cool.
Yeah, they're not as cool.
As, like, the...
And they were created, I mean, let's be straight. They were created just to be like, hey, this is such a popular character. Mm-hmm. Let's do a girl version so girls will be into it. Which never really worked. Yeah. But, no, I totally agree, dude. I was, like, blown away. And then also, and I don't know if you picked up on this. Did you ever play like the original, I think it was
Zelda.
Zelda, yeah. I think it was Super NES. Maybe not. Like the original like Superman game.
I mean, probably, dude, but I don't remember it.
It was kind of like a side scroller kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
And you're walking around just like fighting everybody. But there's a move that he would do in that where he like holds his hands up like in boxing position, and then he like slams him to the ground, and it like propels him forward. Mm. And she does that like constantly. Yeah. And I wonder if that was like a purposeful move. I mean, it had to be.
Yeah, dude, that's really cool.
Yeah, but she looked great. I thought
her acting was incredible, dude. Whenever they discover why she's there and Kal-El isn't, and she's just like yelling. Dude, this like I love it when someone can just be so sort of primal and yelling like the what did you do like that.
I agree.
Oh, it's so cool, dude. And then, you know, that you see the scene in the trailer where she flies straight through a Scud missile or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, man, she's just so cool. What, dude, like, imagine just being like a young kid her age. I'm pretty sure this is like one of the first things that she's done, and she just lands this incredible role, and she does it well. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if, because James Gunn, I guess, came in when this movie was pretty much already filmed. So I know he's kind of gutting all of like the universe to start over with like a younger cast, which I think is smart. And it does, you know, have some like foresight involved, but I wonder if he's going to hang on to her, you know, because she is like young and.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope so. I mean, that's the toughest part of his job right now, and talk about scrutiny that he's going to be under. Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, and I haven't seen much about it, but apparently I guess people are calling for him to be fired because he had all these like tweets.
Yeah. They did that back in Guardians of the Galaxy days though.
Yeah. But he's like just like, apparently there's like tweet after tweet after tweet where he's just trashing like Batman. And so all of you are like
what? Like, what is he saying? What is
I don't he know. Saying? I didn't look into it a ton. I just I read like a brief little thing about it, but I thought that was a little bit.
But I mean, what better job would you want to have? In my opinion, like that's all the reason for him to potentially work on this for now. Yeah. It's like maybe he creates a better one. I mean, you know, if there's something you don't like about a character, dive into its world and make it what you want, you know? Well, and if it sucks, then, you know, the market will say so.
I think he was bashing, like, the original, like, comic version, just as a whole.
You mean,
and
like,
so
the
your
early
super
days?
Fans are like, F*** you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. DC. Well, I never thought I would say this, but I think Marvel's in equally bad shape where it's like I don't know. I mean, I think you and I disagree on this, but I think Quantumania, I was pleasantly surprised with it.
I guess I got to keep going. I couldn't even get through it, man. I was just like, God. I thought like visually it wasn't great.
See, I thought it was pretty good.
The acting was kind of like, oh, now his daughter.
There's that same kind of.
His daughter. I don't know.
She's not a great actress.
No.
But yeah, no, I thought The Flash was pretty, like, it had some really funny moments. So the thing that's weird is, like, I've been, like, a pretty big fan of Ezra Miller, like, his acting for a while. Like, I just think he's a quirky, like, weird, well, I thought he was a quirky kind of weird dude, but, like, turns out he's, like, real weird.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you on this movie. Like, there are some, like, little things where you're, like, this guy's like, there's some like bizarre like choices, like in just the way he like chooses to like do certain things within the role.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's odd. I was confused. Now he has like a Latina mom.
Mm-hmm.
That was very confusing because
he doesn't really look Hispanic.
Yeah. And I mean, usually Alan isn't a.
I mean, the comes mom. From his, yeah, his dad.
But. You know what I mean.
We're just trying to teach Tyler how names work today.
Speaking of Latin.
Although I thought she was hot for like
yeah,
an
no,
older
she did
lady.
Great. But speaking of Latin, a movie that I could care less about seeing, and it's kind of sad because I kind of like the character, is that new Blue Beetle movie.
But that kid's from Cobra Kai, man.
I know, but his acting is not always the best.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It looks kind of cool. I'm just, you know... The thing is, too, I just feel like, I don't know. It's kind of hard, man. Both Marvel and DC have a kind of tough situation because they've done really well with big name characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what now, right? And so they're just kind of like, you know, like pulling from, you know, within the depths of the archive here and, mm-hmm. or just remakes. And it's like, hey, I don't know. It's just tough. It's like on one hand, you want to just say, well, I'll just kind of give it a rest. Like, I didn't really watch all of Loki. I should, but I'm just like exhausted by it.
Dude, Loki's awesome, man.
Same goes with Star Wars. I mean, Ahsoka's cool and I'm enjoying it, but like, is it really necessary? I mean, you know,
I started it, but
I'm just so kind of fatigued by it all.
Yeah.
That I feel like there's sort of, now I will say there's elements of Obi-Wan that I really liked, that show. Mm. There's elements of Ahsoka that I'm really digging. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that the way that I look at, I think the smartest thing that could be done at this point is, and I don't know, maybe they tried to do this with Blue Beetle. And again, I haven't seen it, so maybe I'm unfairly judging it, but God almighty, that, I mean, it just, it looks.
I mean, it certainly looks better than Quantumania.
No way.
Yes, dude.
Go back and watch Quantumania.
Dude, in that part in the trailer, whenever he does that like cool, almost anime move with that like sword thing, come on, that's amazing. Quantumania is like, oh, dad, crap.
You're crazy. But no, I think the key is basically doing what James Gunn did with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a property that nobody asked for that movie to be made.
Right.
But I think if any team that it would have even been, it would have been just as good, I think. Like, you know what I mean? It was kind of down to like the casting, the directing. So any like sort of franchise isn't the right word, but like any sort of character or character like team that you would mm-hmm. have used, all the TLC and like the love that they put into that movie, the original one especially, I think it would have been just as good. So to me, like, I just don't know why we're not taking big swings like that. And I mean, it's, you know, it's like, it's very stylized. It has its own like thing, that like very like 70s, early mm-hmm. 80s thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know. It's weird to me. And it's such a missed opportunity that like DC isn't doing like more of that.
Yeah. I don't, you know, it's tough too, because Guardians of the Galaxy, man, I don't know. It's hard to say. I was going to say it's probably my favorite franchise in that whole mm-hmm. universe.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, and it's
would
a team
it do
that,
as well if it wasn't sort of intermixed with the other movies, including some of the other characters too?
Oh, yeah. Dude.
Yeah,
because, I mean, to me, like,
they kind of stand, they can stand alone pretty
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and honestly, I kind of, anytime you see them with other characters, like, it's cool, but it's sort of like, yeah, but I'm okay with like I kind of just want another Guardians movie,
yeah,
you know?
I feel like that trilogy might be up there with, in my opinion, one of the most perfect trilogies
mm-hmm.
ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's weird to think of it as a trilogy just because there's so many, like, you see them in,
cameos
like,
and stuff,
Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, different cameos and stuff. But, yeah, I think it's so good, man. A couple other movies coming out, or shows, rather, that new, like, Wheel of Time season.
Oh, yeah, it came out, right? Season 2?
I think so. I haven't seen it yet.
Me
but
neither. I feel like I need to go back and rewatch season 1 again just to kind of get into it.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I never watched the second Shadow and Bone either.
Dude, I didn't either. And that was another one that I really I really liked. I still think you need to give that new like Superman animated series a try.
I tried looking for it, man. I don't know.
It's on Max. It's just My Adventures with Superman.
My Adventures, okay.
Yeah. And there's this other show on Max that I just happened to like stumble across, and it's called A Discovery of Witches.
I've heard of that, but I don't know anything
about
it.
That's pretty good, dude.
Is it like what? Like fantasy? It was like modern day? What? Like?
I mean, I don't want to give it away, but yeah, it's sort of like modern day sort of alternate reality where, and I mean, they talk about like witches, but in my opinion, they're not really like witches. They're almost like mutants. It's not like anybody can just like become a witch. It's like you're kind of born with whatever. So it's just sort of a placeholder title, I think, right, in my opinion.
Okay.
But then like you have like demons and like vampires and they're all like sort of intermixed in this like world. It sounds cheesy when I say it, but it's done really well and really like subtle.
Mm-hmm.
There's hints of like Twilight, which sounds awful because I do not like Twilight at all. But I feel like they do it right. Like you should just watch the first episode. It's pretty cool.
Is it like it sounds? So it's kind of teeny bopperish?
No, not at all. But just sort of I don't want to say love interest, but just some of the sort of relational aspects of the show feel sort of like, oh, you're kind of doing a more grown-up version of, you know, Twilight.
Okay.
Okay, so here's something that I want to talk to you about that I discovered, and I'm so fascinated with this, and I think it's so cool. And actually, oddly enough, speaking of like Twilight, there's a director that I ran across, and you know, with movies like Border of the Line, Hamlet 3, Master Vile's Midnight Shock Theater, End of the Rope, Delete Your Facebook. Do you recognize any of these movies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because it's by this director named Alan Smithy. Does that name sound familiar to you?
No.
So I discovered this little fact where basically this title, Alan Smithy, is actually a pseudonym. And it's used by film directors and has been since back in 1968, where basically if you're a director, right, and say you make a movie and, you know, I mean, this is a perfect, like, movie episode, really. But if, say, you make a movie and the studio just can't keep its hands out of it, and like all of your decisions that you had, your big vision that you had, it just keeps getting like compromised and watered down. Basically, as a director, you would basically go in front of like a guild, the Directors Guild of America. You would go in front of a guild panel, and you would, if you could prove that their satisfaction, that like basically you weren't able to exercise your full creative control over a film, and if it went along with like all of the, you know, the guild rules, and you couldn't publicly talk about the circumstances, basically you could sign off on it and change your name to Alan Smithy.
Wow. So like basically there is a catalog of movies under Alan Smithy's name.
Yeah.
And they're just like director cut versions of them, kind of.
No. Like, we're talking like oddly enough, Rudy was actually one of them.
Wait, and I would, what?
Yeah, I would say that Rudy was like such a great movie. The Twilight Zone movie was one of them. There's a few that were like actually good movies that just sort of had different circumstances. Like, I think the Twilight movie, there was one.
Well, hold on. Because like, I'm just looking this up here. There's one that's coming out that Alan Smithy's doing called Annatar. And let me give you the synopsis, folks. After causing the collapse of their own planet, the Annatar people of humanoid aliens who evolved from ducks are searching for a new celestial body to call a nest. During their wanderings in space, they land on Pandoro, place where living beings and nature have found their strange balance. Love, war, spaceships, and space ducks are the ingredients of this grotesque modern fairy tale about accepting what is different from us. And the cover it's basically just like blue ducks.
Of course.
And
papyrus font.
It just, you know, it reminds me of that Adam Sandler line when he's like, well, I drew the duck blue. I mean.
Yeah, so basically the pseudonym was created in 1968 for a film called Death of a Gunfighter. And during its filming, the lead actor, Richard Widmark, was unhappy with the director, Robert Totten, and arranged to have him replaced by Don Siegel, which is kind of interesting that, I don't know, I think because the scale was so much smaller that it could be like, oh, this actor doesn't like the director. Get him out of here.
Get old Alan Smithy.
bring another guy in. So Don Siegel later estimated that he had spent 9 to 10 days filming while Totten had spent 25 days. Each had roughly an equal amount of footage in Siegel's final edit, but Siegel made clear that Widmark had effectively been in charge the entire time. When the film was finished, Siegel did not want to take credit for it, and Totten refused to take credit for it because he felt it was so compromised. And then there was like a hearing with the DGA panel, the Directors Guild panel, and the dispute agreed that the film did not represent either director's creative vision. The original proposal was to credit the fictional Al Smith, but the name was deemed too common and was already in use within the film industry. The last name was changed to Smythe, then Smithy, which was thought to be a distinctive enough to avoid confusion with similar names, but without drawing attention to itself. Critics would praise the film and its new director, the New York Times commenting that the film was sharply directed by Alan Smithy, who has an android facility to detail. And Roger Ebert would comment, saying the director, Alan Smithy, a name I'm not familiar with, allows his story to unfold naturally. So I just thought that was so cool.
It's weird because as you're kind of scrolling through the list of like the filmography for Alan Smithy, there's
you see some
a strange mix of like things like one called Beach Cops in 2008. And then there's like Heroes in Chains, Volume 2. Mm-hmm. Hamlet 3, because the first two weren't good enough. Jeez, man. But I'm not seeing Rudy, pal.
No, It's in there. There's a list. You'll find it. There's a list that's like Alan Smithy movies that were actually good.
Alan Smithy movies that were actually good.
There's actually, and I wanted to find it before the episode, but I couldn't resist. I had to bring it up. But there's actually like a documentary called an Alan Smithy film, Burn, Hollywood Burn.
What's funny is like scrolling through this, there's a lot more sort of television episodes. So imagine being like the director or whatever it is, and you know, it's the Cosby Show or whatever, and you're like watching and you're like, wait a minute, no, I don't remember this episode, and it's totally different and it's hilariously bad.
Yeah.
Go for it, Alan Smithy. Wow, that's interesting. I guess that's who should have done the most recent, speaking of, you know, superhero movies, Fantastic Four, The Bomb from a couple years ago.
Oh, God. Yeah, that would have been a perfect one. But yeah, what I was saying about the Twilight Zone movie, this is an interesting one because, you know, all the other ones, for the most part, are very like, oh, there's a disagreement or somebody was replaced, you know, that kind of thing. In the Twilight Zone movie, the second assistant director, Anderson House, used the pseudonym for the first segment in which actor Vic Morrow and two children were killed in a helicopter accident during production. This represents a rare instance where the Alan Smithy credit was taken by an assistant director.
Man,
I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, some of these movies are like recognize.
A lot of them I don't.
Well, like the Bloodsucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh.
Never heard of it. Now, speaking of obscure movies like that.
Oh, The Birds Part 2.
Oh, cool, man. They came back.
Yep. Maniac Cop 3, Badge of Silence.
Okay.
Oh, Hellraiser Bloodline. Interesting.
Speaking of obscure movies and stuff, dude, I discovered this treasure trove on YouTube of full movies that someone has uploaded of like really hard to find 80s horror movies that are just like either very difficult to find on VHS or whatever. They're definitely not streaming anywhere. Some of them are, some of them aren't. Anyway, I created a playlist that I'm happy to share with you and anyone listening. All you got to do is shoot us an email or send us an Instagram message or something, and I'll send you the link to the playlist I created of all these just random one of them. So this is, again, in my eternal search for this movie that I've been searching for all my life. I actually watched one that I'd never seen before called, oh no, I just had it on the tip of my tongue. Oh, crap. I forget. But anyway,
Like a horror movie?
Yeah, from the 80s.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me see if I can figure that out while we're talking. But anyway, I'll share the playlist because it's got some really, really good stuff that, you know, you can't really find very often. Like if there's one called, obviously I put Sleepaway Camp on there because, you know, got to have it. Classic. But I mean, just a bunch that I had either never heard of or I remember seeing the cover, you know, and it's just everything from early 80s to late 80s. And early 90s. I mean, a bunch of like sort of cheap summer camp slasher stuff, that kind of thing.
I feel like I don't know. You may not agree with me on this, but I feel like there was a period where you had like the 80s was just full on kind of embracing like the campiness and horror. And it was, you know, for the most part, all practical effects. Mm. I feel like that there's like a little, and I mean, there's some great movies within this like era, but like early 90s, there was like a little bit of like a changeover. And to me, that's like my least favorite time, especially with like horror movies.
Yeah.
Because it just gets like, it's still over the top, but it's not doing like the campy thing. It's like, there's nothing practical. It's very like early CGI. And it just, it's such a, I don't know, such a kind of down era for movies, especially in horror.
So the movie real quick that I watched just in case, and it was pretty close in some areas, is a movie called Doom Asylum, which came out in 1987. Anyway, so I got over around, I think, 65 different full-length obscure 80s and 90s movies on there. Anyway, it, you know, it's worth just kind of having that list so that you can watch a bunch of random stuff that you never get a chance to. Some of it's so crappy. Some of it's interesting and strange concepts, man. Some of the stuff that they did back in the 80s. I can't believe sometimes the things that actually made it to film. I guess it was Alan Smithy.
Dude, I would say there's at least one Alan Smithy movie in there.
You're probably right.
One thing that I want to kind of cover, I know we don't talk a ton about comics, but I figure, you know, this episode is real random. And that is this new series is coming out. I think it's next week it'll be coming out, but it's...
We will return after these messages.
America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions.
It was very intense, bright light.
For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures.
From another dimension, another world, I don't know.
The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
This is Joshua Cutchin, and you're at my home for weirdness. That would be rad.
My pal and somewhat mentor and just huge inspiration in my own work, and that is Brazil's own Rafael Grandpa.
Yes, dude. I can't wait.
Dude, he's coming out with this new book called Batman Gargoyle of Gotham. And I'm just going to read this sort of like little thing about it. Well, I'll kind of paraphrase, but basically he came out and with this book called Mesmo Delivery, and it was put out by Dark Horse Comics. This was like, you know, I don't know, years ago, 2008 or 9 or something like that. And it's so bizarre, so weird, but just his like take on like cartooning and like creating comics is just was just such a like totally unique in his vision of like how comics were made. He would go on to, he made this book called Berserker, which was a book that, you know, basically it was Keanu Reeves. Keanu was like behind the book, and Raphael did all the covers, and it made it like the biggest selling book of all last year just because of his variant covers. He, you know, has done a ton of covers like Wonder Woman, Action Comics. He did a book with Frank Miller called The Dark Knight Returns, The Golden Child, which it may not be like my favorite of his. He's just like, he's such a brilliant like inker with like a brush. A lot of like the tick marks that I do are like totally inspired by his work. But it's basically, this is his chance to like kind of throw his hat in the ring for him to do what Frank Miller did back in 1986 and come out with like his very own sort of Dark Knight Returns, you know, new, completely new sort of vision for like a new Batman. And I guess it's coming out, oh, let's see here. It's going to be coming out in time for Batman Day, which is Saturday, September 16th. It says it brings his twisted vision of both the Dark Knight and the city of Gotham to life in a tale that reaches its icy black tendrils into the deepest and darkest corners of human nature to leave you gasping for breath and begging for more. One of the things about this book is that, and it's kind of interesting because like him and I sort of talked about this before. I'm not going to give anything away, but he had told me this idea that he had for the book years ago. And I was just sort of like, Jesus, man, that's like, that's a, I didn't really say this to him, but it was like, wow, that's a big sort of swing, you know? Mm-hmm. But I kind of think like we've seen Batman in every sort of incarnation through the years that I almost think you kind of have to do those things, you know?
Yeah. And like, I mean, I don't know, I guess specifically what you're referring to, but I think it's going to be really cool. Like, I mean, the artwork that I've seen so far, and I mean, obviously anything that he's done, it just, man, it looks incredible.
Yeah. So listen to this, and this is immediately going to give you what I'm saying. This blurb says, in a Gotham City where every day feels darker and more irredeemable than the last, Batman makes a definitive choice to kill off the Bruce Wayne identity for good and embrace the cape and cowl full time. But though he knows the streets of Gotham, Batman will soon come to find that he hardly knows himself. A serial killer is on the loose, and while the murder victims seem random at first, every clue draws Batman closer to the terrifying truth that they are all connected, not just to each other, but to him as well. There's like a completely new rogues gallery, all new bad guys, no Joker, none of those guys. They're all new.
Man, see, that's exciting to me because, like we were saying earlier, there's almost this fatigue with the same old stories, the same old characters, rehashing of them. I mean, I'm not really looking forward to if they do another movie with Pattinson or whatever. Paddington?
Oh, no, they are. I'm glad you brought this up. I just saw a thing yesterday that was talking about, I guess he was asked about, there's sort of a, I don't know if it's like a sort of in the rumor mill going around that like there could be possibly like a Robin in that Batman universe. And he said, the only way that I'm cool with that is if we get a kid that's like 12 or 13 years old, mm-hmm. which I think would be so exciting.
Because, yeah, no, that stuff's cool. I'm just saying, like, the Joker design.
Oh, yeah, is yeah. Yeah, just, as far as that goes. Yeah. No, I'm talking about, like, just, I mean, you can go back and listen to our Batman episode, but Woody and I both were just, we just raved about it because we both thought it was fantastic, the Pattinson.
Yeah.
Batman. But I do think that it could be cool to introduce, like, finally, like, a kid Batman, you know, in such like a dark setting. I mean, it reminds me of
a kid Batman, or you mean?
I mean, sorry, a kid Robin. It's why I love like The Dark Knight Returns so much, because you have the Robin is a girl, Carrie Kelly, and she's like a young kid, and like everything, including Batman and like all the villains and stuff, everything's so dark and gritty, and this sort of alternate universe, like where they're in like the Reagan era, like 80s. Sort of Cold War, but then you have Carrie Kelly, and her suit's like sort of bright, and it's like she was sort of plucked out of like the 66 Batman with like Burt Ward, Robin, you know. So it was a cool like contrast, and I can only imagine like how that would look in that sort of world that they've created for like the new the Batman.
Yeah, true.
I think that could be cool. But yeah, get out there and get this book, Batman Gargoyle of Gotham. It's going to be a huge book. I mean, they released it at San Diego Comic-Con this past year, in the last couple of months. And it was just, you know, kind of gangbusters. There's like a ton of alternate covers with like Jim Lee, Frank Miller, one of my favorites, Paul Pope. Like, it's going to be a massive book. Oh, and one of the cool things too is that one of the things about Raphael is, like I said, he's an absolutely brilliant inker. You know, everything's like with a brush. Well, he's moved over to doing everything now digitally, which is a little bit of a bummer for me. But I will say, like, I was a little disappointed on his work with like The Golden Child, like The Dark Knight Returns, The Golden Child that he did with Frank Miller, because it was all, none of it was brush. It was all pen. And, you know, you could tell that he was trying to kind of like, because it was in The Dark Knight Returns sort of world, you know, I mean, it was a Frank Miller written book. So like he was really leaning into that. It was a lot grittier and kind of messier. And so even though he's doing this new stuff, like digitally, it has the feel of like his other stuff. So all that to say, everybody was like, well, where can we, you know, your big art collectors and stuff was like, okay, this book's great, but where can I get a like just the inks only version, like the black and white version.
Yeah.
And that's like my biggest thing that I will scour the earth to find those editions. And 9 times out of 10, they're either Italian, but most times the French editions.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did release, and actually you can still get it on Amazon. There's like a French version where it's like, it has like all the colored regular version, and then it has inks only with no words. So it's just like the high-res scans of like just what he did, like his inks. And so people were asking for that so much on this last book that he basically had DC agree, okay, well, I'll do this, but I want to release, at the same time that I release the first issue, I also want to release the noir edition that's all just in black and white.
Man,
so
that'd be killer.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
And it's funny because I never thought that I would be even close to being excited about anything black and white until getting into manga.
Oh, dude. I mean, if I could choose one thing to make in like black and white large format, would be Paul Pope's sort of big swing Batman Year 100.
Mm.
It's so amazing. And just the work in there is just incredible. I mean, that's another, like I said, like another big swing. It's so like, I don't know, admirable to these guys that take, like you said, these characters like Batman, that it's like, oh, well, we've seen and we've heard everything. We know everything about the character. Like, what possibly could you do? Well, then, you know, Paul Pope did this thing, I guess early 2000s. I always want to say 90s, but I don't think it was in the 90s, where he did like a full run. And it's like set in like a Blade Runner type future where like the police are like almost like teams. And so they're all into these different teams are kind of like going after like criminals and sort of, he's always like on the hunt. It's a futuristic Batman and he's like this Latino dude. But then it shows like, you know, and I don't want to spoil it for you folks that haven't read Batman Year 100, because it is like absolutely amazing. But, you know, you see, it does show like, oh, the Batman is like a mantle. And I think that's like the big sort of, you know, takeaway on this book that was really cool.
That's super awesome, man.
Yeah, dude. Well, cool, man. I think we have enough randomness for one episode. Again, happy birthday, Woody.
Thanks, man.
You're my closest friend on the planet. And on the one hand, it is a little sad because, you know, you being 49,
you don't have
a ton of time left. But I just want you to know that I appreciate you and we appreciate you here on the show. And
well, I appreciate that, man.
So happy birthday.
Thank you.
If you want to find us, head on over to Instagram, drop us some comments, shoot us a DM. If you want to tell us, you know, an urban legend in your town, or like what comics you're into at the moment, or what obscure 80s horror movies that maybe we've missed, or that maybe is not, that did not make Woody's list. Mm-hmm. You can shoot us a DM, shoot us a comment. If you want to tell us a longer story and are more comfortable with like email, head on over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. Or even better than all that, you can head over to thatwouldberadpodcast.com, where you can leave a voice memo and maybe get featured on the show. We are coming on the October Spooktacular that we do every year, which is our favorite time of the year. And we really would love to get your own like sort of spooky story or personal encounter or weird like fringy paranormal kind of thing that you've experienced in your own life. We'd love to hear about it, you know, and we'll throw in some spooky music and sound design and make it awesome. But you know, we have a lot of these, but we sort of have themes that we're wanting to kind of match up. And so, you know, if you've been waiting to send in your story, well, now's the time. And we'd love to hear from you. Get over and give us a 5-star review on whatever you're listening, however you're listening to our podcast on. It really makes a big difference. Tell a single friend, tell that weird friend at work that, you know, may belong to like a Bigfoot researching club on the weekends. Like, that guy's going to probably love the show. Or maybe
absolutely
not. But usually those are the folks that gravitate towards the show. And the more the merrier. It makes this family bigger and better, and it allows us to do, you know, bigger and better things. Head on over to our Patreon, The Rabbit Trail, more of what you love. And yeah, buy us coffee, buy some merch. You got anything else, Woody?
I think you pretty well covered it. One thing I was just thinking of, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it doesn't actually have to be something that you've experienced. We also get a fair amount of, hey, have you guys ever heard of this? Really want you guys to cover this because I love what you do with the sound design and everything, yeah. and I want that story in this format. So that's if you can point. Think of anything like that in the same communication methods that Tyler mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. you know, do that. Shoot us a message. You know, the reality and consequence, just, you know, being upfront about, like, if it takes us a little bit to get back to you, we are, the good news is we're getting a lot more new listeners. And so mm-hmm. as such, we get a lot of messages and we try to get to them as soon as possible, typically yeah. on the day of. But if we don't, mm-hmm. just forgive us. And I promise you, we'll get back to you sometimes. I've even been known to send a video on my early morning walks if I'm so inclined. So,
and if you're lucky, you get to see Woody wearing his headlamp.
No. I haven't sent any of those yet. But yes, I what do if you wear just a headlamp.
Sending like infrared videos because
it's just the lamp just like blazing into the camera lens and they're like, this could be anyone.
Nice.
Anyway.
Even better. All right, cool. Well, we'll see you next week. We love you. We appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes.
You always said our future would be a parade of